J.C. Corcoran Podcast.
We told you yesterday on the show to be listening because we had a surprise. And we do. What time does the food get here, Joe?
I think the food gets here 8 o'clock.
Yeah. We have to wait until 8 o'clock to eat. Jesus. Okay, here's the deal. Today is Mike Bush's birthday. And through a bizarre series of plot twists and dastardly communication between, where are we, Joe? Olivet? Is that where our station is?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Olivet, Creve Coeur, West County, and Chesterfield. We are currently sitting in the basement of Mike Bush, unbeknownst to him. Now, here's the deal, folks. Bush is upstairs asleep. We've been bringing our equipment in here since about, what, 4 this morning? Before 4 o'clock. Last night, we were admitted to the Bush household. We've been here for about the last half hour, just waiting here. Now, Bush, here's the deal. For somebody who wants to screw this whole thing up and call him on the telephone, we've disconnected the phones. Get out of the house. The phone call is coming from inside the house. Get out of the house. Now, here's the deal. Bush's alarm clock has been disengaged. The phones have been pulled out of the wall. We're in the basement.
We're going to kill him.
And his muffled screams won't be heard over the loud rock music. All we're doing right now is deciding how to do it. I'm in favor of covering his whole body in honey, tying him to a chair, and then leaving him for the ants. Be a slow, painful death prolonged over an extracted period of time. Joe, what are you going to go for?
Well, after we kill him, we're going to take the blood and we're going to paint pig. No, we're going to paint kosher pig on the wall.
Well, he's Jewish. I think pig would be bad enough, wouldn't
it? Yeah,
you got it. We're going to take his blood. We're going to write pork.
It's amazing, though, because Mike really is upstairs, and he really is sleeping. Now, we're down in the basement. If he wakes up and figures out somebody's in the house, and he goes to call the police, the phones are going to be disconnected. He's going to be so scared he won't know what to do.
Let's rattle a few papers or something. I like that idea better than ours.
You know what we should have done? We should have got the sniper, who is a black man, about 6'4", 6'5". Probably about 250 pounds.
Go upstairs and just, like, wake him up.
We should have had him stripped down naked, put talcum powder all over his body, and then walk upstairs, ask to borrow a cup of sugar.
Howdy, neighbor. This is like giggling in church. This is pretty wild, folks. This is pretty wild. I love this. All right, so anyhow, here's the deal. Yesterday morning, Bush, he played into our hands beautifully on this. Yesterday, Bush overslept, his alarm didn't go off. And so he said, no, I'll run downstairs and do the sports. I'll run downstairs. He has like a little mini studio down here. It's just a microphone hooked up to a little mixer and stuff, a little power supply. So what we do today is we're going to let him oversleep at 7 o'clock. And then we're going to call him on the mobile phone. We'll plug the phone back in the wall, call him on the mobile phone and say, come on, you got to do some sports. You got to come running down here. And then, of course, he comes running downstairs, opens up this door.
You know, we kill him then. He'll be so surprised.
All we're trying to do now is decide what to do with the body. So far, medical science has turned it down. They're thinking about doing some bizarre experimenting with pigmentation.
But Koppelman's Deli offered us $5.
We have him stuffed.
Hey, we got a special on tongue today.
As far as we know, in his will, he's donated his nose to science. I can't believe how much cheap crap we got in the house. Okay. Shut up, Jimmy.
Mike's gonna be yelling down the stairs. Those are all fake coochies.
St. Louis weather. New battle cloudy's day. 50% chance of thunder showers. In the mid-80s.
Just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
What a resilient group. And the 2019 champs are not going to go away easily.
Shots are 5-1, Colorado to start overtime. Barbashev, cross corner. Bozak got there just ahead of Byram. Tyler Bozak in the skates of Letty. Here's Bozak. Lines and shoots, he scores! Tyler Bozak in overtime has forced game 6 in the series.
Tyler Bozak has only played 7 minutes and 15 seconds in this hockey game, and he jumps onto the ice and instinctively just fires this shot, stunning the crowd here in Denver, and the Blues mount an incredible comeback to win this one 5-4 early in overtime.
All I can think about is all the people who gave up on the game and went to bed early last night because they gave up. And I know that because I almost did it myself. How you doing, kids? Thursday, May 26th, 2022. 166 days remaining in our American democratic system of government as we have known it. How you doing? I'm JC. You're at jcontheline.com. I was prepared to say, as we talked yesterday, maybe the most humiliating loss for any major St. Louis sports franchise ever a couple of nights ago. But maybe now that memory gets wiped out and is replaced with what happened last night in Denver, Colorado. This is Monday night miracle level stuff. Somewhere my buddy Doug Wickenheiser is smiling. And so now here we go tomorrow night, Friday night. I say Friday night because this is our last podcast now until next Tuesday when we come back after the holiday. So if for some reason you're not listening to this on Thursday the 26th, it might sound a little funny because this whole thing may be resolved or close to being resolved by then. We'll see. But can you imagine trying to get into our building on Friday night for Game 6? And we have this little thing in St. Louis about Game 6s ever since David Freese ought to come out there and drop the puck on Friday night. And you know, everybody remember the Game 6? All right, so we got another Game 6. Let's do it again, boys. Different jerseys, different sport, but it's still a Game 6. Wow, wow, and wow. All right, we may come back to that a little bit later on because I'm still geeked over this whole thing, but a lot of people taking off. A lot of people have already taken off for the holiday. A lot of people will be leaving either today or tomorrow, and the gas prices are sky high. Here's a couple of tips. They say to fuel up today. Gas prices are supposed to peak tomorrow, so it might save a couple of bucks if you fill up now. Plus, you don't want to waste gas and time sitting in line at the pump while everybody else is leaving town. So that's number one. Then the Gas Buddy app finds the cheapest gas stations all over the place. Also, if you can pay in cash, a lot of places charge 10 to 15 cents more per gallon when you use a card, so just make sure you don't cut into that savings with high ATM fees. Instead, a lot of grocery stores do free cash back. And then make sure your tires are properly inflated. This was me the other day. I feel like my car is driving on big beach balls right now because I had let the tire, I had the little tire indicator for about a week and a half. And when I re-inflated that tire the other day, I pulled away from that gas station and I felt like I was riding on air. So they're not kidding about that. Traffic Safety Board says it can save you 10 cents a gallon. But the other survey says 80% of us don't have them at the right PSI. It's usually on the inside of your driver's side door on the frame in there. Like mine's 36, I know that. So it's sort of weird if you complain about high gas prices, but you are losing all of that mileage simply because you don't have your tires properly inflated. If you're shopping this weekend, or a lot of people will, be aware that some Walmart locations are cracking down on self-checkout shoplifting, and some shoppers are upset because they claim they're getting hit with citations and petty theft arrests for honest mistakes, quote-unquote, honest mistakes. And on top of this, most people don't even want to do their own checkout. Recent poll says, 56% of us want a human cashier. Only 36% say they would do self-checkout. You better get used to self-checkout because that is going to be the thing. In 5 years, there might not be any checkout people. After being cooped up for the better part of 2 years, actually a little over 2 years, a lot of people will finally be getting out and doing stuff that they haven't done in a couple of years. And one of those things is just getting outside and getting some fresh air. Gosh, you know, if you got the right weather, just get out of the city, especially, and breathe some fresh air out in the country. A poll asked people to name their favorite types of air to breathe. Mountain air was number one, followed by air at the beach, then air at the woods, the air you breathe when you're on a hike, the air at home. Apparently, just there's a comfort level of the smell of your own place. Number six, amusement park air. Well, it's because funnel cakes are cooking all over the place. Campfire smoke is number seven, even though the EPA says if you breathe that in, it's worse for you than cigarettes. Library air at number eight, the smell of intelligence. Number nine, the recirculated air on planes. What? And number 10, the smell of a concert. Yeah, because people are smoking doobies. And as far as St. Louis weather air, this is going to rain itself out. Rain like crazy here. Some spots with some heavy rain. Well, we're raining the entire time. But some people are going to get deluged. And then the whole system clears out most of Friday, but especially Saturday, Sunday, Monday, just looking absolutely magnificent in St. Louis. Perfect weather for the holiday. And it would be nice if at some point over the Memorial Day holiday, it's one of my favorite holidays on social media because people really are proud of their parents, their mothers, their fathers, uncles, grandfathers, stuff like that, who fought in wars. And I love seeing the old pictures and if there's a good story that goes along with it too. And I don't have a lot of favorite days on social media, but the only one I do really enjoy. All right, let's talk about the new Top Gun movie, Top Gun Maverick. Hard to imagine a more anticipated summer blockbuster, huh? It was delayed a couple of years because of the pandemic. It's the sequel to the iconic 1986 film, and it delivers pretty much everything fans have been waiting for, everything that is but originality. This time around, Tom Cruise's Maverick summoned to instruct a bunch of, well, the usual bunch of overconfident, egotistical, hotshot Navy pilots. This time it's a dangerous, intricate, and some say impossible aerial mission to try to take out a stockpile of nuclear material in one of those foreign countries we don't like. One of his students is a real hothead known as Rooster. He is played by actor Miles Teller. He is the spitting image of the old man, Goose, Cruise's wingman who was killed in the original film. Rooster harbors aircraft carrier-sized resentment toward Maverick. Cruise's character still dragging around at least that much lingering guilt. The director of this movie, John Krasinski, is big on flashbacks. We see clips of Meg Ryan, Anthony Edwards. You get the old Kenny Loggins classic Danger Zone again. but he's also big on cannibalizing the original movie. Cruise still riding that motorcycle while he's grinning for no apparent reason. Sweaty, shirtless pilots. Well, remember the volleyball scene in the original one? This time it's football. I don't know why characters in movies have to put on sunglasses before they conduct rousing sing-alongs in a noisy bar, but we see that again too. And if the 86 film was loud, then this one is deafening. Honest to God, this is, you're going to think I'm exaggerating. I'm not. I was wadding up Kleenex and shoving it in my ears to keep my eyeballs from shattering the other night. John Hamm plays a real sourpuss commander. It's sort of a disappointing cliche. And if you blink, you're going to miss Ed Harris in a similar role. Jennifer Connelly. Now we're talking. She plays a barmaid. And even though she looks like a million damn dollars in small unmarked bills, somehow she's not seeing anybody. And she serves as Cruz's conflicted love interest. Lots of homoerotic hugs given out and received by Maverick. Those scenes made me think of that video, though, that was leaked online a couple of years ago. It showed Tom Cruise passionately embracing Scientology's grand poobah. And then there's Val Kilmer, Iceman. And I don't want to tell you anything more, but I will say this. Outside of some of the outrageously exciting flying sequences, this is probably the best part of the movie. There's also some big laughs, but the cliches really do this movie in. By the three-quarter mark of Top Gun Maverick, I was correctly predicting almost everything that was about to happen. You could just see everything coming. But I'll tell you what, these big Navy jets are pretty exciting. The action is compelling. The actors are very, very good-looking. And by the end of the movie, I sort of felt like I'd just been to McDonald's, you know? I was full, I had a good time, but it occurred to me I probably hadn't really done anything that good for myself either. 3.5 corks out of 5 for Top Gun Maverick. Get a bucket of popcorn, enjoy the film. It opens everywhere this weekend. I don't know, maybe you've heard. I remember this pretty well. In 1989 on this date, I was in Hawaii and sent a copy of a picture that we had taken on our Hawaii trip. We took 80 people, 80 listeners to Hawaii, and I got my picture taken with Charo, and Berger loved that. He printed that. 1984 on this date, movers arrived in St. Louis, delivering my stuff to my apartment at the Timberlake apartment complex in Kirkwood. Then I flew to Chicago to get my cat. And then I came back and they lost my cat. I'm walking all over the airport on a Sunday night looking for my putty tat, and nobody knows where my cat is. And I'm just traversing the airport for about 45 minutes, and all of a sudden I see the carrier with my cat just sitting on a conveyor belt. I just picked her up and I left. 1989 on this date, I'm sitting in my house in Chesterfield, and I get a call from the press box at Busch Stadium that says, John Goodman is in the press box. So I dropped everything, got in the car. I got from like Clarkson to Busch Stadium in about 14 minutes, parked the car, went running upstairs into the press box, and there he was. And I come walking into the room, and keep in mind, I had just interviewed him, I don't know, 6 months earlier for this movie called Punchline with Sally Field and Tom Hanks. And that was his first real sort of big movie that he was in. Like, I'm walking into the press box. Hi, John. He sees me, comes over and puts me in a bear hug and lifts me off my feet. Even though it was only about the fourth or fifth inning, John at that point clearly had been, shall we say, overserved. But he kept saying, you gave me a fair shot. You gave me a fair shot. Which I guess meant that he liked the piece that I had put on TV from the interview that I had done with him in California. And I guess his friends back here in St. Louis all told him about it. And so John was my friend, and he's been my friend since. On Saturday's date, 1993, my 53-day stint at the 50,000-watt clear channel voice of Del Mar Gardens, KMOX, came to a conclusion. Ann Keefe had been making disparaging comments about me on various shows, newspapers, and stuff like that. So the St. Louis Business Journal called me up. What do you think about all this? And I don't remember exactly what I said, but at the time, I just thought it was funny. And I said, you know, my relationship with Ann Keefe is sort of like the relationship between Granny and Jethro on Beverly Hillbillies. I didn't even know what it meant. It just sounded funny. And I came in the next day, and Rod Zimmerman, the vice president and general manager, is like, oh, it's like lava coming out of his ears. I'm like, the hell did I do?
KMOX Radio News Time, 3:07, and now a statement from CBS Regional Vice President Rod Zimmerman, General Manager of KMOX Radio.
I wanted to let the KMOX audience hear the news from me. J.C. Corcoran is no longer employed at KMOX. When Mr. Corcoran joined the station a few months ago, I hoped he'd be able to channel his talents as a member of the formidable KMOX broadcast team. But now it's apparent to me that my decision was incorrect. I feel, however, that correcting the situation as soon as possible is the best way to achieve our goals.
Thanks, Dean Wormer. Hey, if you don't like the way the whole thing played out, why didn't you tell Ann Keefe to shut up and not be making disparaging comments about a staff member of the radio station? Me. I hate to sound like I'm 9 years old, but she fucking started it. It's just as well. I didn't belong there anyhow. Not at that time. One of the few movies I have ever walked out of. You know, my job as a movie critic is sit there and tell you whether it was good or bad, but every once in a while, once in a blue moon, something is so awful that you're like, I'm sorry, I cannot justify having 2 precious hours of my life taken away with this garbage. The year was 2009, and the movie was My Life in Ruins. Nia Vardalos, who had just done my big fat Greek wedding, I don't even want to talk about this, but I walked out. And of course, every year at this time, it's the Greek Fest out in West County. And again, the weather just looks absolutely amazing. Warm on Friday, hot on Saturday, really hot on Sunday and probably Monday. There have been some Memorial Day weekends, like I said, that I can remember were freezing to death. Just to follow up from the other day on the special announcement that, I don't know, I told you almost 2 months ago that I was going to have an announcement, and then it was like, no, it's going to take longer, and then it's going to take even longer. But we're really on the precipice of this thing right now. All I can tell you is me, Katie Cruz, Radio Rich Dalton, Michelle Holliday, all coming on the air in a new radio station broadcasting out of St. Louis with an additional signal out in the Westplex. Plus, my Sunday morning oldies show is coming back. That got the highest ratings of anything we ever did on any part of the last radio station I worked at. So that's coming back. And the music is going to be fantastic. You know, Keishi, for example, plays 356 songs. That's it. 356. And I don't want to start any fights with those people over there are still all my friends. And so this isn't going to be like the old days where you start chirping at each other and starting fights and, you know, saying nasty things about each other on the radio. I like all those people. Those people are my friends. There's room for both of us. We are just going to do things a little different. And one of the things we're going to do is going to be much looser with the music. You're going to hear a lot of stuff that you haven't heard on the radio in a long time. And I can promise you this. We're not going to sound like anybody else. And this, by the way, is just phase one of what's going to be happening. This is going to sort of roll out in phases. So what we debut with in a couple of weeks may not be exactly what's going to be there in a couple of months, but I'm not at liberty to talk about that right now, but it is part of a much larger and fairly complicated plan. But I think all of this will hit on social media and some other places probably over the holiday weekend. So just watch my Facebook page, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. You'll get all the details. And this thing is almost ready to launch. It's ready to go. We are only now a couple of days away. It's very, very exciting. How about this story? Colin Kaepernick worked down with the Raiders yesterday. Laura Hediger, News 4, do you have any update on that story?
And played along Colin Kaepernick. So you go, girl. Colin Kaepernick.
Birthdays today, Thursday, the 26th of May. Helena Bonham Carter, 56. Lenny Kravitz, 58. Bobcat Goldthwait, 60 years old. Philip Michael Thomas, remember Tubbs on Miami Vice, 73. Hank Williams Jr., 73. Pam Grier, 73. Stevie Nicks, 74. Brent Musburger, 83. And a guy I got to know a little bit in Omaha, Nebraska, of all places, and then in Minnesota. It'd take a very, very long time to explain all that. But Eddie Albert, who was so funny in Green Acres and just as good in a drama like The Longest Yard, the original version, and then also in the sensational movie The Heartbreak Kid. This guy was a good actor. He was versatile, and I don't think he ever really got enough credit because he was on Green Acres and it was such a silly show, and so I guess, you know, at that point, people didn't take him seriously anymore. And he was a really, really nice man. He was funny, like in a really quirkish way. He made it all the way to 99, died on this date in 2005. As you know, if you've been listening this week, this is my 38th anniversary in St. Louis. Did the very first show on the old Morning Zoo this week, back in 1984. Where were you then? What were you wearing then? And what did your hair look like? And it's been fun this week because I've been talking to the U-Man, John Hewlett, a couple of times this week because we've been reminiscing about some of the old stuff. And as Jen Sparks, one of our co-hosts, said a long time ago, that U-Man and JC are the only two men that she knows whose appearance actually improved with hair loss. That's really funny. And so we have the Memorial Day weekend, and then, as I pointed out earlier, a lot of fun stuff going on this weekend, and then especially as we get into next week when we launch a brand new radio station with some old friends. This is going to be great. Don't worry about the podcast. Podcast remains intact. We're going to make a couple of adjustments in terms of the publish time, but other than that, podcast will remain intact. The pool's open. I bet you if you open up your back door and sniff around, there's somebody already smoking a pork butt or starting their ribs early. And with all the focus on the Blues, it's important to remember we're going to have to see how we do against good teams now. Cardinals have been beaten up on Pittsburgh and other bad teams for the most part. But now here come the Brewers for a big, big weekend series. And this just occurred to me, you're going to have a giant cluster Friday night in St. Louis because the Blues are back in town, the Cardinals up against the Brewers. Let's hope that the weather cooperates for all of this. But as I say every year on the last date we're on the air or on the podcast, as it may be, going into the holiday weekend, at some point, even if just for a moment or two, just pause, trying to remember why we are having these days off, about the real meaning, as they say, of Memorial Day. I may take down my Ukraine flag that I've been flying for the last 2 months in front of our house and put the American flag up, at least for the weekend. They got all these little flags that I put on the perimeter, and it's nice, you know? It's just nice. Make you feel good. And all of those aunts and uncles, grandfathers, grandmothers, everybody who ever had anything to do with any of the wars in this country, do it in their honor, all right? Do it in their honor. There's a lot of things I don't like about the direction this country has taken the last 20 or 30 years, but it's still ours, and this is Memorial Day weekend, and so at some point, just for a couple of minutes, just slow it down, put the cheeseburger and the Bud Light down, and just think to yourself, yeah, you're going to hear a gentleman here in just a moment as we flash back to a couple of interviews that I did with Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg for Saving Private Ryan. That movie will be playing on cable on and off all weekend, and sort of nice to go back and hear these two men who have dedicated so much of their time, their careers, to preserving the memories, collectively speaking, of the men and the women who gave their lives so that we may live freely. So have a great holiday weekend. I'll be back with you on Tuesday, and I'll have even more details then on Tuesday morning here on the podcast about the new St. Louis radio station that I just told you about a little while ago.
Circumstances leading to his death.
Felt his loss tremendous.
Robert's commanding officer.
His heroic service to his country.
A great soldier, dedicated friend.
The grace of God and the aid of your
those
son,
of us
I'm alive.
Please accept my most sincere condolences.
He will live in our memories.
And to you, my deepest sympathy.
Colonel, I've got something you should know about.
Yes?
These two men died in Normandy. This one at Omaha Beach.
Sean Ryan.
This one in Utah.
Peter Ryan.
This man was killed last week in New Guinea.
Daniel Ryan.
The three men are brothers, sir. I've just learned that this afternoon their mother is getting all three telegrams. That's not all. There's a fourth brother, the youngest. He's somewhere in Normandy. We don't know where.
That boy's alive. We're going to send somebody to find him, and we're going to get him the hell out of there.
Some private in the 101st lost three of his brothers, and he's got a ticket home.
It's not going to be easy finding one particular soldier in the whole damn war.
And here we are with Tom Hanks. Well, I'm not going to start talking about you. I'm going to start talking about Steven. You know, I can't really imagine a lot of other directors being able to pull this off. I've heard stories about him arriving on the set in the midst of total chaos and being able to just walk in, assess the situation, and get what he wanted out of the scene. Just talk to me about working with this guy.
Well, it's pretty accurate. Can't keep up with him. Can't imagine where he gets this instinctual drive from. Cannot fathom how a human being can walk onto the set, watch what the scene is, and say, okay, bang here with an 85, we're going to come around here, put it on a Western Doll, I'm going to put it on a Sticks right here, Mitch, have this on your calendar, then I'm going to have a loose 50, but I want you to get, you know, this is the way he talks, this is the way he thinks, and he does it all without censoring himself for a single moment. It's all this kind of like, and see, that's the reason he's the big boss man.
Well, people have already been noting, some of the early test audiences and screenings, about the staggering level of graphic violence in Saving Private Ryan, and I'm trying to tell people, you gotta see the movie anyhow. What do you tell people who might be scared off when they hear about all the violence?
Well, you know what? Yes, it is a violent film because what happened at that place at that time was very violent. But it is not gratuitous in any way, shape, or form. Well, I think, by and large, movies have an awful lot of violence in them now, and all of it is of little consequence. Buses blow up, ships run into buildings, airplanes crash with people on board, and essentially all that you really see is a really glorious fireball in slow motion and a bunch of, you know, pieces of a fuselage scattering across in a really cool cartwheel. And really all it's there to do is to look really neat and glamorous. None of our stuff is particularly glamorous, and it is of great consequence. We show both sides of the violence equation. We show the bullets being fired, which looks like bullets do when they are fired, but we also show the bullets piercing human flesh. It's not a pretty sight, but if you can survive that, if you can just bear witness to it for the first 26 minutes, it will place you in the midst of an emotional journey that I think is unlike anything I've ever seen in motion pictures.
Let's talk about that opening sequence. It must have been chaos for a director.
I shot that sequence relatively quickly. I mean, it took me about 4 weeks of 6 day weeks just to shoot that battle. And that might seem like a long time, but we were shooting it very, very fast inside of each day. And I think that gave all the actors and gave all the members of the crew a real sense of being under fire and constantly having to get behind something. And of course, there was nothing big enough to get behind on that beach. They were so exposed, those soldiers.
There's going to be a lot of people trying to get inside your head to determine why you chose to tell this story. Obviously, for the under 30 or 35 crowd, their experience with war was the Persian Gulf, where it was played like a video game on television. Talk a little bit about why this story.
Well, every generation has had, you know, their war. You know, my father had his war in World War II, and then there was, you know, the Korean War, and then there was the Vietnam War generation and the Persian Gulf War generation. Sadly, there seems to be a war that has touched in some way every generation. I certainly hope that's not going to continue into the 21st century, but it certainly could. And I think because we live in an age right now of total disclosure, where the media, the print media, the TV media is always demanding the truth from people, from CEOs, from presidents, from everybody. Everybody is yelling about truth and even trying to find truth where the truth has already been told. They'll keep looking for it. And I just felt when I approached this movie in the late 90s, why should I be any different? Why should I suddenly sugarcoat the truth and just do another war picture that kind of glamorizes, romanticizes that war? Because that was the romantic war, whereas Vietnam was the honest war. But the people who died in World War II died just as horribly as the kids who died in Vietnam. And I thought it was about time, just before the century ended, to at least do a story about those veterans, my dad's generation, to be able to honor their war.
Stephen, there's already been some noting from some of the test audiences and screenings, and people are starting to just, you know, there's these little rumblings. Well, you know, that first 30 minutes, boy, that's staggering violence. And there's going to be some people who are scared off by that. They're going to see it. They're going to hear about it. And they're going to say, I don't know. I just don't think that's for me. I don't know. My personal feeling is that every American could see Saving Private Ryan. We might not get in another war for a long time. Just talk about that a little bit.
Well, you know, my feeling is that I'll never, you know, try to encourage an audience, you know, to see something that they don't think they can take. I actually think if the audience thinks going in that it might be too much for them, and holding their eyes closed or even holding their ears closed and looking away wouldn't help. And they aren't the people for this movie, and they shouldn't put themselves through the experience. But there's going to be a lot of other people who are going to be able to put themselves through the experience. I remember when The Exorcist first came out, and everybody was saying how horrible that was, you know. And I, in fact, wound up watching part of the movie from the lobby. I actually was outside the doors of the theater with the doors open, peeking around the curtains, and watched some of the movie from there. Believe me, I'm as squeamish as anybody. When the first Alien movie came out, I found myself in the lobby looking through the curtains, watching part of the movie. So I understand how certain audiences feel, because I'm that way. But I think once an audience can get through the first 23, 24 minutes of Omaha Beach, whether they get through it looking away or just looking up periodically, it's going to give the rest of the picture, which is not that intense, an entirely... it'll make them physical participants with those soldiers throughout the rest of the story, even if they only watch part of the opening.
I don't think I've ever said this at the end of an interview, but I want to say thank you for Saving Private Ryan, director Steven Spielberg. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Everybody who complains about going to work at 8 o'clock in the morning somewhere should come here and look down this stretch of beach and consider what was asked of that generation to do on June the 6th, 1944.
Someday we might look back on this and decide that Saving Private Ryan was the one decent thing we were able to pull out of this whole god-awful mess.